Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a damp and overcast 66 degrees. Titled the show, Viruses, Parasites, Pandemics, Vectors, Coevolution, and DNA Trap. We had started and had been looking at bacteriophages over the last couple shows, how they are now putting them into our food, meat and poultry products, spraying onto lettuces. And I also found another story about them putting them on the surfaces in processing facilities to prevent contamination to tomatoes, spinach, as well as broccoli. And we also found out they're putting it on leafy lettuces as well. Now, today, we are going to continue this conversation, and this is a conversation that is very long in coming. We had planned to do this a couple months ago and then had technical difficulties, but I have two special guests on the line with me today. We have Mr. Clint Richardson, and I'm sure most of you know who Clint is, but for those who don't, Clint is an author, a researcher, a documentarian, and a former radio show host. He had two shows. The most recent was Red Pill Sunday School that you heard here on UCY, and the one before that was Corporation Nation that originally aired on RBN, and Clint has graciously allowed me to play rebroads of that show as well here on UCY. Good morning, Clint. How are you doing today?
Very nice. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm very excited to have you on. As everybody knows, this is the one before the last show. Actually, this coming Friday is the last show for UCY and for, well, not for UCY, but for Before the First Cup until September. We also have Mr. Patrick Jordan. Oh, Patrick is back. Are you there, Patrick? Patrick is an author and a researcher as well, and he deals with mad science topics, kind of like we deal with on the show. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Now, from some of the conversations that I've heard you and Clint have, and the one that I remember most was an interview that you both did with Shali back in 2016, where you discussed a lot about bacteriophages, and that was long before I had gotten into this area of study. But back when I listened to that show, I remember thinking, wow, that stuff is pretty far out there. It's almost like science fiction, invasion of the body snatchers stuff. And through probably the last year and a half, looking at the stuff we've documented, looking at studies and Nature.com articles, and National Institute of Health articles, about some of the things that they're doing, utilizing not only bacteriophages, but also plasmids in DNA-based type, not only inoculations, but also genetic therapies. Now, I don't know which one of you would want to jump on top of that, but what are your...
Well, let's start just, you know, I'm gonna give it over to Patrick because he's the one that's always studying this stuff. My personal take is what you just said. Let's start with that. Genetic therapy. Okay, another term for that is biocontrol. When they're not using a phage therapy on something that is an animal or a human, they'll call it biocontrol, like over agriculture and stuff. So, you know, biocontrol, that's kind of an interesting word. Genetics is also a very interesting word, which we, you know, if you've done any study, genetics is just code for eugenics. Genetics is the new eugenics. That's what it is. It cannot be mistaken for anything else. So what we're talking about here is, again, biocontrol. We're talking about the ability to control the outcome of disease. We're talking about the ability to turn on or off and to control the... What they call, you know, bacteria comes from the Greek to devour, and that's what bacteria does. is it devours. It gets rid of bad things that aren't supposed to be there. They're genetically attuned and in harmony with nature to know what it should and what it should not devour. Well, so here's the problem. What happens when you start making people and animals and foods and dirt and air and water? What happens when you start messing with the genetic code? What happens when you start messing with the bio, what's it called? The biosphere, the stuff, you know, your gut. What happens when you start really screwing with people, with animals, with plants, with nature itself, to the point where that bacteria is going to be like, holy shiz, look at all of this. We got to devour the whole damn planet, because the planet is now at dis-ease, right? It's not at ease. It's not in harmony. It's growing. It's cancerously growing in ways that aren't supposed to happen. Why? Because of genetics, i.e. eugenics, because of men trying to control basically nature, right? Trying to have knowledge that it's not supposed to have. And so I just wanted to start out by making sure that we understand that this has been going on for a long time. When we go back to the quotes from, say, Vera Schreibner, PhD, talking about polio, and when she saw that there was all these cancer viruses, monkey kidney viruses in the polio, she said, in thousands of cases of viral and aseptic meningitis were used to be reported as polio before the Salk vaccine, and then 90% of polio cases were eliminated from statistics by health authorities because they redefined the disease when the vaccine was introduced, while in reality the Salk vaccine was continuing to cause paralytic polio in several countries at the time when there were no epidemics being caused by the wild virus. Now, in other words, when we say wild virus, we know that means something that was actually really, truly supposed to be there. It might be a bad thing to us, but it's supposed to be in the wild, right?
Well, we evolved have, with it, too.
Right, right. So we have protections against it. We have rabies is another good example. We have friends that have said, that work in the centers that monitor rabies. They said they haven't seen a wild-type rabies virus in years. They say the only virus that comes in that are rabies from the deer and all these things that we vaccinated are all man-made. There is no wild virus that we're fighting anymore. We don't need to fight the wild virus. Unless we've completely taken ourselves out of the ability to fight that by messing with all these phages. And these phages are, of course, what phages are. To me, phages are kind of like bacteria farmers, right? they kind of control, right? They harvest and they grow these bacteria colonies, right? And then you have your congressional hearings in 1962. Polio increased after mandatory vaccinations over 50% and 80% in certain times. So the point is, we're introducing stuff into the body that's not natural, and not also introducing that phage or whatever, antibody, whatever, that would correct the infection. And the only other thing I want to say is, let's be clear what this is. What did Salk and Sabin, what was their goal, right? Even Sabin himself admitted that large-scale vaccination failed to obtain any significant improvement of diseases, right? But Sabin, he was a real bastard. He wrote Man Unfolding and Infectious Molecules in Human Disease. You want to get a precursor to all this, you go back and you start reading Jonas Salk's work. Who invented, of course, the live virus polio vaccine, Man Unfolding and Infectious Molecules in Human Disease. Like, that wasn't something, that was, this is a eugenics, genetics type of thing. They're not doing this to avoid it, they're trying to find it, right? When they were infecting rabbits to try to find interferon and destroy it so that they could give people disease, they weren't trying to cure anybody, they were trying to infect the rabbits, but the interferon, as they named it, was getting in the way, right? They're not finding these things and trying to destroy them to help us. So we go to the word of evolution. Okay. Evolution, the act of unfolding or unrolling. What happens in a prion infection? The prion infections unfold and refold into a foreign form. That's evolution, in other words. Okay, you got to rethink the word evolution. To evolve is to unfold or to open and expand, to throw out or to disclose, right? So we go down, we start getting into these other words when we understand to be evolved is to be unfolded, to be open, to be expanded, to be admitted. And that's actually what's happening to us through these new medicines. What is disclosure? To uncover, to open, to make known, to discover, to reveal by words. Well, you could say that DNA or similar things, you could say that we're being revealed by the letters in the DNA. They're not words that we're familiar with, but you could say that we're being revealed, discovered, disclosed. What does it take, by the way, for a patent to be put on to anything? Well, it takes discovery, right? It takes a unique or novel creation out of what was already there. So basically, we're being turned from something that was known, unknown, to something that is known so that it can be patented. So our whole bodies, therefore, will be able to be patented. All of our genes, all of these genome structures, DNA patterns that they're now altering us into, they're discovering us, they're evolving, they're unfolding us. And that, of course, leads to the word apocalypse. What does apocalypse actually mean? To disclose. Revelation, discovery, disclosure. What is the revelation? What is the apocalypse? The act of revelation is the act of disclosing or discovering to others what was before unknown to them. So if you start to rethink the notion of what the apocalypse is, it's forbidden knowledge. It is not that different than the story, the allegory of the Tower of Babel, and why we had to be silenced, quote unquote, put to confusion, if you will, by God, because we're getting so much information, so much knowledge, so much, like I said, it's information, it's not knowledge. We don't know anything. We just say, oh, let's add A to B and see if we get C. Oh shit, we got D, right? So we have this disclosure, this discovering of information without knowledge, and we're applying that information without any idea what the hell we're really doing, in the hopes of either positive or negative evolution, i.e. eugenics. That is the foundation of what is happening here, and I just wanted to put that out before we get this, because really we have to understand genetics is eugenics, and we're going through literally the apocalypse right now. We are disclosing, we're being revealed all these things that we are not supposed to know, that if we do know, we will cause havoc and chaos and basically go back to those times warned against as an allegory in the Bible. That's what I wanted to get across as a foundation of what we're talking about. This is purposeful.
No, I'm sorry, Patrick, but I would like to add just one more thing. Now, I know in that last interview from 2016, you had mentioned CRISPR, and we've spent a lot of time on the show looking at who I call Georgy Porgy Church and CRISPR technologies. But what's interesting to me at looking at how we are being evolved by all of these unknowns being introduced into our person, George Church has a book titled Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. And he co-wrote that with Ed Regis. But he's always been all about not only one of the inventors of CRISPR, but also about evolving humanity. And he's currently working on that RECODE project, which is looking to make humans, I know one of the projects was to make humans impervious to viruses, but he's saying that it might be easier to start rewriting chunks of human code as part of that Synthetic Human Genome Project.
But that's his main point there is invention. And what do you do with inventions? You patent it. You copyright it.
Right.
That's the Pope. In other words, we're being involved into slaves, evolved into property.
Well, right. And where's the law or any type of documentation that says, you know, once you get any of these therapy, quote unquote, therapies into you, even if it's sprayed through your food as a nutraceutical or something, how much change to your cellular structure becomes somebody else's? Because that's a question that I've never seen answered.
Patrick, you want to take that?
We're going to have to come back to that, because while you guys were talking, and thanks for talking, because it solidified my notes. I've been working on these notes for 2 days now. And I will line item everything that everybody has said so far and give you the supporting evidence for it. I have to start with a Clint quote. Clint said, people who read or write science fiction have the advantage because they can think like the bad guys. And the problem here, the universal world problem right now, is that there's an author, Carl Zimmer, who wrote a book called World of Viruses. And he said, you know, this is the current scientific analysis, that bacteriophages are the most numerous entity on the planet. They outnumber and outmass all life forms. Now, if that's the first time you heard it, isn't that like the best kept secret in the world? People haven't probably even heard of bacteriophages. And what does it mean? Phagocyte is an eater cell. So a bacteriophage is a bacteria eater. And what Clint was talking about in his long introduction, and people are going to lose it. Everybody should listen to this show at least two times. The things that Clint was going over so fast was that the world is now confused on what is food and what isn't, because the phage, the bacteriophage, means to eat, and it would eat bacteria. It would eat for us bad bacteria. When bacteriophages were first discovered by Twort and then D.R.L. in the early 1900s, they were literally using these things as antibiotics, and I'm going to say the C word. They literally cured disease with bacteriophages. What happened next was Eli Lilly came into the picture. They subsumed all of D'Errol's work and made it disappear, because whereas the Russians realized all the way into the 1950s that you could cure dysentery, you could cure cholera, you could cure insanely, you know, devastating diseases with bacteriophages, all they had to do was go to the pharmacy, ask for a packet of phages that, you know, they were powdered. You'd empty the packet into a glass of water, drink it, and you were Bob was your uncle. And what did America do with that? America turned it into their bioweapons program. So let's go back now to the 1930s. And a lot of this stuff comes from my book, Timeline, A Brief History of Hell, and that should tell you something right there. In 1930s, the concept of molecular biology was born, because they started to study the bacteriophage in like an industrial way. And just like Clint says, when they study this stuff, it isn't for we come in peace and the good of all mankind. They're studying it, just like I said, to develop biowarfare. And what they discovered was these phages could transfect genetic material from the phage into the bacteria using restriction enzymes. And you're going to love this, Jules, because I get the impression that people think that plasmids are a new thing or a new discovery or a new topic. And what it is that the plasmids came from the freaking phages. That's how they got their, like, code into the bacteria. So they would insert a restriction enzyme. It would cut the host DNA. The plasmid would come in, and through the influence of these molecules, it would just, like, unzip the circle because that's what a plasmid is. It's just circular DNA. Unzip the circle, put it in to the code of the bacteria, and then the bacteria was taken over. It was rewritten, just like Clint was saying. They are rewriting man evolving, you know, like Salk said. They're changing nature. And how are they, you know, this mysterious they, how are they doing it? Because they studied the phage, this thing that people don't even know about. And that was 1930. Also in 1930, they crystallized the tobacco mosaic virus. And this is where it starts to get really creepy. A fellow named Stanley, working at the Rockefeller Institute. And, you know, all these things that I'm saying, they should be like little pinpricks to the mind. It's like, oh, my God, you know, Rockefeller is involved. Eli Lilly was involved. 1930, the FDA was formed. 1930, Eli Lilly unleashed thimerosal on the world. 1930 was the Great Depression. And it's like when you take, and this is why I did my timeline book. When you take all these things in succession, you go, well, these can't be accidental history. This can't be happenstance. This has to be a planned operation. And so what happened with the tobacco mosaic virus? By 1939, Stanley was injecting it into animals. They had no idea what they were doing or what was going to happen. They just did it. But 1939 is when they discovered the Rh factor. And I freaked out this morning when I saw that association. See, I put the book timeline together, but you can't keep, you know, hundreds of pages of history in your head, and it's like, oh, wow. You know, TMV shot into animals, Rh factor discovered. I'm just going to let that, you know, simmer in people's heads. But the whole point of this is from 1930 to 1940, that's 10 years. And within industry and government, 10 years is about the time where you have a big idea, you do the laboratory work, and then you make some kind of like public disclosure. So by 1940, bovine serum. So what they would do is they would slaughter animals, and if there was a pregnant cow, they'd cut out the fetus, and there'd be literally a pool of blood and guts everywhere. And they toss the fetuses in one bin and send the cows for processing into meat into another bin. And what they discovered is a great tool for making vaccines was fetal bovine serum. But the problem is you can't have literally a sea of blood and guts and baby calves that you're going to exsanguinate and not have bacteriophages. Because like I just established, bacteriophages are the most populous entity on the planet. So it's going to be contaminated. Therefore, they were shooting into people, at least by the 1940s, bacteriophages, directly into them. This is maybe the accidental part of the history. It's like, oh, well, we didn't know the phages were in the baby cow blood. You know, maybe they could have that as a beg-off. But can you, when Del Brook created what they called the phage cult at Cold Spring Harbor? Now, like I said, kids, what I'm going to do is I will support everything that Jules has written. You know, that this was something that was sent to me offline, that, you know, these are points that she wants to make and connect, and what Clint has just said. Now, what did Clint say? Evolution is not evolution, it's eugenics. The main thrust of Cold Spring Harbor was eugenics. That's why that lab was created. So now we've got bacteriophages being studied at Cold Spring Harbor. And what does a bacteriophage do? A bacteriophage transvects genetic material from one organism to another. What is that? Oh, wait, sorry, I got ahead of myself. Let's talk about the tobacco mosaic virus. Now, there was a Nobel Prize given for, and this is the one piece of information that I wasn't able to put together before the show. I don't know the name of the dude, but he was given a Nobel Prize because he said, you know what, if you disassemble a tobacco mosaic virus and you dump it in some water at the right pH, that damn thing will come back together like a Disney animation. And so it's called self-assembly. So you could bust apart a virus, put it in a solution, and the virus would reform. So what I'm trying to say, and you know, we're trying to get all this soundbited really quick for everybody, is
was that Stanley prisoner that you're talking about?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to find that article at the last minute. What that means is that a virus is a nanomachine. Does everybody get that? Because and the other thing that I want to share, you know, me and the Red Hands, and you know, Clint is part of that conglomeration. We think in terms of continuum, that we don't have like separate problems. There isn't a separate problem of bacteriophages. There isn't a separate problem of virus. There isn't a separate problem of GMOs. There isn't a separate problem of nanomachines. There isn't a separate problem of synthetic life. There isn't a separate problem of transhumanism. There isn't a separate problem of artificial intelligence. I am here to tell you that all of those things are connected, because with the advent of molecular biology, they learned how to make the Legos of life, and that's how they are evolving everything on the planet. And that's what Jules said, is George Church wants to reinvent nature. Are you freaking kidding me?
Well, this is the same thing Jules was actually talking about on one of her shows, when she, well, probably several times, but she, you know, she was going through, as we all do, going through these specialists. And, you know, they're award-winning PhD specialists in a certain topic, and yet they know nothing about any other part of the body but what they deal with. And right. So you cannot bring them any information. You can't talk to them about anything else except what their specialty is. For one thing, they can't, because it would be a lawsuit, and they'd be giving medical advice without a license or whatever. And so, you know, my idea is how do you really defeat the whole medical industry is you make specializations, you pay these guys a shitload of money to be a specialist instead of a general practitioner, and, you know, you make the general practitioner low on the pay scale, et cetera, et cetera. So Patrick's, really what you're saying is we're not specialists. We're like looking at every possible angle, putting it all together in what do you have, 14 books now?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, I have to say, Patrick, you're exactly, the entire premise of the show has pretty much been looking at each of those topics, and that's the end result of 7 years of broadcasting. That's the idea that I've come to. It's all part of the same thing. They're enslaving biology is what's happening right now.
Exactly. Because they figured out the building blocks of life. They can now make a 6-inch high blue elephant. They can,
right.
But the question was asked in Jurassic Park. Well, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should.
Well, let me interject here. Speaking of, keep in mind this is part of the education system. This is actually on an education website, the Unfolding of Man Research Note Educational Policy Research Center. 67-47, okay? I want you to listen to this very carefully, because the whole idea and the reason that we've seen all of the separations of church, the notion of separation of church and state, in other words, separation of the moral law from the legal law, the diminishment of the power and understanding of the concept of having a moral law under God, specifically, i.e. nature. The idea was to eradicate all those barriers, because, of course, the moral or the higher law is called that because it's supposed to be always considered when considering what you are. You know, should I do this is the question. Should I make a pink or a blue, a pink elephant that's 6 inches tall? Should I do that, or does the law of morality, the law of, you know, nature say no, this is something that we should not do? Those are the lines that got blurred. And here's what it says in the education aspect of it, referring to the Unfolding of Man. Material gathered from education, religion, medicine, and related fields compromises this practical approach to dealing with human development, i.e. evolution, the purposeful evolution of man, the unfolding of man. The unity underlying the multiplicity of ways of growth, which is over 150 educational methods or systems, is a recurrent theme. The unity transcends the seemingly diverse intentions of education, psychiatry, and religion. In other words, those things are opposed to each other, and for good reason, because you have to have that sort of, just like you have the judicial, the executive, and the legislative, which have now been basically put into a corporation, and there is no opposing force. They're all in conjunction with each other. There is no actual competition. Likewise, education, medicine, and religion have become basically supporters of each other instead of that which is opposed to each other. That was a necessary thing to transfer over a few generations. The author contends that close scrutiny may uncover enough of a meeting ground to warrant the ambition of a unified science and art of human change. Indeed, a consistent view of man's development will fuse the three currently separated disciplines. So by evolving, by unfolding us and reforming us in their image,
yep.
we'll suddenly find that these three completely opposite, opposing, and purposefully so opposing laws, essentially, are suddenly, you know, they're consistent. They agree with each other. The author suggests a phenomenological approach to practical ways of personal growth, etc., that would contribute to the unfolding of man. And, you know, this is not just the unfolding of the DNA or the unfolding of the prion or the protein structure. This is also the unfolding of our very system of law, our very system of ethics and morals and values, right? So this is completely a 100%, it's a dome. It's everything included in here. It's not just physical, but it's also mental unfolding, so that we don't have, and you're seeing that very much today, where people are literally denying anything of nature, of God, etc., and that's a very important part of this. His approach is intended to elucidate two things: the unity of secular and religious views. Imagine that, the unity of secular and religious views, when the whole purpose of those two views are to be opposed to each other. It has to be that way, or it's pointless. Right? So, concerning the process of the unfolding of man, the unity of secular and religious views, that's like denying nature in every way, shape, and form. And then secondly, the unity of various methods of achieving human growth from the standpoint of experiences these methods elicit. So, I mean, you're talking about a full frontal attack on morality. Not even the man-made morality, but the notion that, as we're talking about, of literally reprogramming nature itself, or attempting to. And of course, that's going to reach back, slap us like a little bitch. But not until we do it. Not until after we do it will we see the consequences, right?
Well, Clint, you know, you just made me think about that new bill that they signed, the Right to Try bill. And I had covered the 21st Century Cures Act, trying to get the FDA out of the way and quote-unquote speed cures. But now this new Right to Try bill is almost kind of what you were talking about, merging secular and religious, because this is for patients who are dying, allowing them to bypass the FDA to be able to get experimental treatments. And I know some people will laud this and say, oh, that's wonderful, you can extend somebody's life. But on the other hand, you know, if you were faced with that situation, would you try some of these mad science gene therapies where they're going to snip, snap, and see if they can zip and unzip and see if they can turn you into something new?
What would make you, what would be the basis of your decision? Exactly what I just talked about. If you have nothing to go back to, if you have no moral compass, and you completely you have nothing to turn to that tells you, hey, this is not the way to go, well, then, of course, you're going to be like, yeah, bring it on, man. I'll try it. It's like trying freaking marijuana for the first time. Why not?
It's deeper than that, in that, let me do a little shameless self-promotion again. My second and third books were The Rise and Fall of Kingdom Plantae and The Rise and Fall of Kingdom Animalia, where I proved in no uncertain terms, it's irrefutable, that the modern medical system arose out of the military. Therefore, when you enter a hospital or clinic, you are an enemy combatant entering the opposing forces, Operation Paperclip torture chamber. And so why would you go for medical therapy? Because Clint and I have just on the show, and you know, we're going through these points so quickly, but everything that he has said, everything that I'm saying, every single thing that we're saying is a point in itself, could be a show in itself, and can be dissected down to the level of what Clint said was that when they were looking at interferon, it wasn't for we come in peace and we're here to help. It's like, how do we get this damn thing out of the way, because we really want to infect people? So when you go for like experimental treatment, the FDA, my God, they are like the psychological warfare operations of the military occupation, to say we're here to help and we're here to protect you, when they actually release poisons on purpose. So you would be going in as an Operation Paperclip experiment of them trying the next new thing, not to cure you, but to see how far they can push the human organism before it fails. That's what Operation Paperclip was all about. They put them in hyperbaric chambers. They put them in vacuum chambers. They kept them cold. They kept them hot. They did vivisections. They did horrible things to human beings just to see how far they could push it.
And that was in America. That wasn't Germany. That was in America.
So, and it hasn't stopped. And it's called your hospital and clinic. So, you know, why would you go for drugs from people that gave you the cancer in the first place? And again, you know, I'm going to promote myself. One of my highest viewed videos is Henrietta Lacks at your cervix, because they shot the freaking cancer into you on purpose through the polio vaccine. Why would you go to them for a remedy when they gave you the cancer in the first place? And see, I've got a meme, I've got a maxim, that if you say things the way they are, then there is no debate. They gave you the polio vaccine, they gave you the cancer, why would you go back to them? And the answer is, you'd have to be seven ways from stupid to go back to the military that gave you the disease in the first place.
Well, fortunately,
so if I may, go ahead.
The education system teaches us eight ways to be stupid, so we're good.
Okay, thank you. If you can justify it by Common Core. So what I would like to do, folks, because this, you know, if the show ended right now, this is the single thing that I want to transmit to the world. Jules brought up the topic of bacteriophages. What are they? The bacteriophage is a bacteria eater. What is it? It is a virus that infects the bacteria that either turns it into a toxigenic, pathogenic monster or makes itself destruct. It's called the lytic phase of the phage. It lyses it. It splits it open. Okay? It kills it. So the bacteria eater is a virus. What are viruses? We found out from the tobacco mosaic virus, and like when they shoot little babies with the hepatitis B, it's not a vaccine that has the hepatitis B virus in it. They simply teased out the endotoxin, the shell, the outside membrane called the hepatitis B surface antigen, which is what? It's a nanomachine. So people go, oh, my God, you know, in this modern age, we all have, like, chronic fatigue. Well, you would if, as an infant, You got shot up with a nano machine that gets into your cells, rewrites the code, and then expresses itself at the expense of the host. The host should be doing its own functions. It should be making its own proteins. And what do? They shot up all the little babies with hepatitis B surface antigen. Now, every cell in your body is making hepatitis B surface antigen and not doing its own job. It's a nano machine. So people, oh my God, nano machines. You know, that's another issue we got to be afraid of. No, viruses are nano machines. What did they use the nano machines to do? Well, the nano machine, and if you looked at a phage, it looks like a freaking, you know, alien spaceship. The thing will inject its plasmids and restriction enzymes to what? Literally change to evolve the bacteria. What is that called? That's called genetic modification. So what does a phage virus do? It genetically modifies an organism. So, and this is where I'm trying to break down the barriers and teach people continuum. We went from viruses to nanomachines directly to GMO, genetically modified organisms. And that's how they learned how to do this stuff, from the phages. And so that's what I'm saying, it's continuum, it's all connected. When you look at the history, there is no delineation between these topics. And what does GMO do? It leads you to synthetic life forms. Now you can use the Legos to make whatever the hell you want. People have heard of Cynthia, released in the Gulf to eat the oil. Cynthia never occurred in nature. Cynthia was developed in a freaking lab. And, well, aren't we the lab? Aren't we walking labs when they shoot us up with Henrietta Lacks's cancer cervix, and now we're walking cervical warts patented by the people that created the vaccines? So that was item five. Viruses, nanomachines, GMO, synthetic life, into transhumanism. What is a transhuman? As synthetic life, we are in that phase, that transition phase of going from what appears to be a human organism as we might define it. You know, if we generally accepted an idea of what a human was, we are going from that into synthetic life and into what will be a transition, transhumanism, between synthetic life and cybernetic organism. But what is cybernetics? Well, it's like computers, and computers can get viruses, and computers are code. Well, viruses are bacteriophages. Viruses are computer programs that mess up your you're trying to do a word processing thing, and all of a sudden it holds you hostage. You know, pay this hacker some money, or you don't get your word processing page back. So computer viruses, human viruses. Computer code, DNA code. And see, what I'm trying to say is these lines are now blurred. We're going from transhumanism to AI. Now you tell me, and I'm asking people, you tell me what the difference is, because I've been looking at this for 10 years straight, and I see this golden thread all the way from at least 1930 till now, where none of these topics that everybody would look at them, separate topic, viruses, nanomachines, GMO, synthetic life, transhumanism, AI, and like, oh my God, we got to be afraid of like six different separate things. No, it's all been one thing, and that's Jewel's topic for today.
Well, that's awesome, because, you know, I was thinking too, with the whole transhumanist connection, I had a listener leave me a couple messages over the last few days that he's not going to recommend the show to his transhumanist friends anymore, because I'm not doing technology insanity. But it is all the same thing. I mean, we remember Kurzweil had always talked about nanobots in your blood, and Kurzweil is one of the papas of transhumanism. So I completely agree with you. This is all connected, and I came from the technology world, and I'm now here in the virus world. So,
and let me support that, because that was my claim, that, you know, everything that you have done to date, Jules, has been right on the continuum line. So when they talk about, well, Jules, you're not talking about tech. We need to be talking about tech if we're going to be talking about transhumanism. Well, I'm right next door to the University of Illinois, and they have a a nanotechnology department. And when they do their machining, and, you know, I'm not even going to describe the processes. When they do their machining to make nano machines, so we're not just talking nanomolecules. We're talking making a device that actually works like a freaking car transmission at a microscopic level. Where did they learn that from? They looked at the flagella motor, and that's what they're called, made out of molecules for a bacteria. So some bacteria have a tail and they're motile, and there's literally, like, you know, it's like got a rotor, a stator, and a propeller, for God's sakes. And that's the way they look at it. And I'm using this language because I'm using their language, because they're looking at life as if it's some kind of, like, engineering problem. Huh, I want to make a nanomachine. How would I do that? Well, let me look at bacteria. Oh, okay. And then they model that in inorganic substances, and then you have to power them. You have to put in, you know, artificial power sources. But what they did is they took from life, and that's all I'm saying, is from the advent of the discovery of the bacteriophages, they have simply borrowed from life to manipulate the very fabric of what we call life and nature. So there's no delineation. You don't have to talk about just tech. It is tech and biology.
That's a lot of what the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering with George Church is working on. And that's tied a lot into DARPA funding as well.
Well, so we're talking about transhumanism. Like, if we take that word trans.
Here we go.
I mean, that means to cross over. That means to, I mean, it's a lot of things that don't really sound that good once you actually, you know, to go beyond, to cross, to go through, to change thoroughly, to transverse, right? These are, and that's why it's transgender and trans this and trans that,
right?
You know,
right.
We're all becoming trannies, and that's not a good thing, right? So, and then you look at the, you know, go back to some of the older dictionaries, you look at the definition of what a machine is, because, you know, they didn't, a lot of, I don't know, there weren't a lot of machines. You had what, the lever, the pulley, the wheel, the wedge, the screw, the plane, right, the Masonic tools, and that was your machine. And a complicated machine would be a combination of those few things. But a machine is nothing more and nothing less than an artificial work.
Right.
An artificial work, something, again, patentable, that serves to apply or regulate a moving power or to produce motion to save time or force. Well, gee, an artificial is simpler, complicated, that serves to apply or regulate moving power or produce motion. That sounds like a slave, doesn't it?
Right.
I mean, what are you doing by transhumanizing, crossing over the human boundary, in other words, making us into a machine that can be patentable? And that's my whole point, is that we're entering into this almost, I guess that's why they call it transsexual or trans, because you're losing your identity. You're losing the very thing that makes you free, that makes you part of, i.e., nature or God. You're losing that sameness, that identity that says, I cannot be patented. I cannot be made a slave. I cannot be. No, you're losing that. And I refer people to a movie called Repo Men, which was a more modern movie, not Repo Man from the 70s or 80s, but a newer one with Jude Law, Repo Men, where these guys were literally repossession agents that worked for the big corporations in the future, and they would go around and they would repossess people's artificial hearts, rip them right out of your chest, and you'd die right there. Your artificial lung, your whatever you had in you, your pacemaker, if you didn't pay your bill for that piece of equipment that was owned by a corporation that you thought you owned, but yeah, no, sorry, we're here to repossess your heart. You can't live anymore because you're not paying your bill. That was their job as repo men, Right? I want you to consider that when nothing on your body is your own, nothing of your body you can say, again, the highest law says, I have the right not to be messed with. I'm a creation of God, not a creation of the state. You're losing that ability to utilize the negative law. In other words, God-given rights, as they call it in the freaking government, right? You're no longer part of nature. You're part of their creation. And I just can't stress to you people how important that actually is. You'll no longer have the right to speak. To free speech or to defend yourself, because you're not yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jules, let me ask you this. Is this an hour show or a 2-hour show?
It's a 1-hour show, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, you make the rules. Why don't you change it?
Well, there's another live show after mine, so.
Well, you're the boss.
Yeah, well.
Oh, come on.
I can't preempt somebody without. Foreknowledge.
But you can, Jules. But see, you're going by the higher law, and I applaud you.
Oh, well, thank you.
So to support what Clint just said, everybody is now familiar with the MTHFR gene mutation.
You know, I've run across it a few times, and I haven't brought that up, but I love the acronym MTHFR.
Gotta love that. But what they've done is they've genetically modified an entire generation. I think people over 40 are more susceptible to the vaccines that did that. But then your metabolic processes are held at hostage because Merck holds the patent on the methylfolate that is like the medicinal grade replacement for what that gene would typically do for you. And so, you know, it's like Repo Men is here. It's below the surface. It's at the molecular level. And people are going, well, you know, hey, Clint, that was just Hollywood. That was fiction. And, you know, they're not going to rip the hearts out of people. Well, they ripped a gene out of you. One letter. It's a one-letter mutation out of a gene, and it's completely ruined people's lives. And now they're holding them at hostage. It's like, well, if you want to get better, you have to buy our drug.
Well, and that's the thing with transhumanism, is that you're not going to be able to survive unless you get the fuel or the maintenance or whatever it is that these creators control. And the maxim of law, of course, the creator controls. You don't demand it. You ask for it. You beg for it. You pay for it. You know that you're not going to be able to survive in nature. Because nature is always going to be at odds with your existence.
So let me add this, if I can. This is so important to me. Let me just throw this out there, that the best radio show in the history of the world is me and Clint on RBN doing a show on yogurt and DuPont and CRISPR. You can find it in the archives. Just, you know, go to Drew Carter, get the archives. It's the yogurt show. It is the funniest, but it is the most scariest thing in the world, because CRISPR, you brought this up, Jules, is not about, oh, how can we make a better 50-ton vat of yogurt without going bad because bacteriophages favored the wrong bacteria and, you know, the whole thing went bad. It wasn't about, better product. It wasn't about, oh, we can use CRISPR to make people healthier by, you know, changing their genes. No, this is what it's all about. CRISPR was the defense mechanism of bacteria against virus. So if you can learn how to defeat CRISPR, then the George Church thing of making human beings impervious to viruses, what did we just say? Human beings are not even human beings anymore. They're in transition to artificial life forms, to cybernetic life forms, to AI. If you can make that next stage impervious to virus, then nobody can hack it. You can't kill the enemy. And I'm, you know, this sounds like science fiction, but we're at that transition point now of where reality is science fiction. And unless we stop this now, I don't know that we can.
And see, the problem is there's no more science fiction. There's only science prediction at this point. It used to be that science fiction was this really cool thing that explored possibilities. Now it's predictive programming. This is what we are doing now and plan to have done in 10 years.
One side note I wanted to mention, you mentioned Merck, Patrick, and I was reading a book called, I don't even remember now, I just had it before, but it was about the history of the biowarfare program, and the first head of the biowarfare program that was appointed happened to be Merck.
Right.
I don't know if you knew. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just this kind of an interesting tie-in to all of this.
You mentioned Operation Paperclip. Merck was part of IG Farben, right?
There you go.
So IG Farben, including Bayer and all these things, were split up. A German multinational pharmaceutical. That's what Merck was. So, I mean, it was part of the original, you know, evil corporation, if you will.
And you saw that they've almost finished the acquisition, Bayer acquiring Monsanto. They're dumping the Monsanto name, I guess, now, too.
Well, I don't blame them.
You're right. Too many bad connotations.
Military and medicine have always been the same. And when we look at DuPont, DuPont was a munitions maker. And all of a sudden, they dominate over half of all dairy, like yogurt, dairy production in the world. That's their thing. How did they go from making killing devices into making food? Oh, wait, is that an oxymoron?
I think edible vaccines are the way of the future, and those would be ones that we don't even know we're getting. I think that's why they've been spraying phages on the food since 2006, at least.
I think that's why they had to tear apart our gut biome and give us leaky gut so that those vaccines can actually get into our system too.
Oh, nice. Right now.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about the flagella and the bacteria, Patrick, and the Bacillus subtilis is something that we dug into on the show, and that actually can go into a spore form, so it can live for a very long time. It also will overtake what is already living in your gut, and it can get out through that gut-blood barrier and swim to other organs.
So, and it's darling now of alternative medicine probiotics.
They're putting it into all these probiotics. I know it's insane.
Insanity.
And you know why? Because it has an enzyme.
Oh, no. All right, guys, this was an awesome show. Thank you so much for being on. This was long and coming. I will catch up with you guys on Friday. Everybody, take care.
Ciao, ciao.